The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Good morning. It is time to get up with Tampa Tom Brady. His third meeting with the Saints, his 14th conference championship game. How did they get it done? Meanwhile, Mr. Mahomes goes down. The Chiefs survive. It sets up the biggest question of the NFL season. We've got the very latest. And Shefty is here with the inside scoop on what may well be the biggest trade the NFL has ever seen. All that and more as we get up with you starting right now on a Monday, and we are jam-packed. And then there were four. The final four in the National Football League is ready. So is Rex Ryan, and so is this squad here. Dan Orlovsky, Shefty's got the very latest. Ryan Clark stayed up late last night, but he's revved up and ready to go this morning as we take you through the action of this NFL weekend. It begins with the game of the night in a matchup of the legend, Drew Brees, Tom Brady, 85 years worth of quarterbacks, second quarter at 6-3 Saints, and then Dan, the huge mistake by Brees.
Yeah, first of all, the internal pressure, and then second of all, the physical play at the line of scrimmage by Murphy Bunting, getting physical with the slot receiver Michael Thomas and then undercutting that out route by Drew Brees. That throw was a huge tone burn, and then I love the throw to Mike Evans. The big body in the red zone, stay in between the quarterback and the defensive back, touchdown Tampa Bay.
So just like that, they cash in on a 10-6 Tampa ensuing drive. Saints trying to respond. This is Jameis Winston's first career playoff pass. And Dan, take a look at the trickery.
Yeah, I love the beautiful design. And then Tre'Quan Smith leaking down the middle field. But this is really about everyone paying attention to Alvin Kamara. Watch the tailback and how many Bucks defenders run that way. They lead Tre'Quan Smith unblocked. I hear you, big cat. It's a great play design by Matt Nagy that Sean Payton carries over to yesterday.
Saints 13-10 is the advantage there. Bucks get a field goal, so we're tied up at halftime. First possession of the second half is Brees to Smith again.
Beautiful throw. We've seen this so much by Drew Brees. That inside slot fade, carry him to the sideline, touchdown New Orleans.
But then later in the third, Dan, this play changed the entire game.
It's incredible about Winfield Jr. Yeah, Tampa or New Orleans wins the rep, right? They get that slant because it's man coverage. But just watch that right hand come in on that backside and punch to finish that play off for Tampa Bay's defense. That ball bounces right to their defender. It's a huge turnover for them.
Saints turnovers and the Bucks cashing in. That was the story of the game. Here's Brady. That's Leonard Fournette. Bucks tied up at 20. Cook knows that mistake was critical. And here comes another one, Dan, although this one clearly seems to be miscommunication.
Yeah, it's really just trying to get a vertical route to Alvin Kamara out of the backfield. But what happens is Devin White does a remarkable job of playing with vision onto Drew Brees. Patient and then no wasted movement. Snaps and drives on that football before Kamara ever turns around. And Drew knows that was a terrible decision.
Saints' third turnover leads to this. Brady takes it himself. Tom Brady giving the Bucks a 30-20 lead. Only the ref isn't excited about it. And one last chance now, desperation time for Brees that is tipped in the air, and that is all she wrote. Drew Brees, in what may well have been his final NFL game, throws three interceptions. Tampa Tom Brady, in his first season as a Buccaneer, has that team in the NFC championship game. The Buccaneers are rolling, and that is thanks to their offense, including yesterday and last week. Tom Brady led teams in the playoffs are now 16-2 when scoring 30 points or more. They've won five straight going back to week 15 overall. They've scored 30 or more in every one of those games. And so let's come out and let's talk it. And Rex, let us start with this. It feels like not that long ago, we were sitting here saying, what is the Buccaneers' offensive identity? Is it Bruce Arians? Is it Tom Brady? How have they changed everything in these last 5 weeks?
I think credit goes to Bruce Arians. And why? Because of the magical play calling? No, because he got out of his own way. He turned it over. Since the bye week, this looks like a completely different offense. Quite honestly, it looks like Tom Brady offense. And him and Byron Leftwich are doing it. And to me, this is crazy. You know, when I look at it, 35 rushing attempts in this game. Mm-hmm. If you combine the two games before when Bruce Arians was calling it, 31 rushing attempts. So Tom Brady understands it. He's all about, hey, the momentum of the game. Defense was playing great. We got to run the football, and that's what he did. Tom Brady's all about winning, period, and he got it done.
He most certainly is. I mean, Ryan Clark, how do we put into perspective the winning that Tom Brady is all about?
Tom Brady's the greatest organization in football. And yeah, he's the GOAT. He's the greatest player of all time. But if Tom Brady was an organization, we would sit here right now and talk about how great they drafted. We would talk about the lineage of winners that they have, all of the Hall of Famers that they have. If you were an organization and say you were like the All-American Toms, right? And you've been to 14 conference championships. You've been to 9 Super Bowls, and you've won 6 of them. Right now, your fan base would be like the Pittsburgh Steelers fan base was when they had won 6. They would always go to that, always go to their winning, always go to their consistency. That's who Tom Brady is. And now he goes from the AFC, where he's dominated for 2 decades, and he comes to Tampa Bay, and we immediately put all of these lofty goals on this team and all these expectations, and all he's done the entire year is fix every problem and exceed what we thought he could be. And when we watched 2 quarterbacks yesterday who really looked like it was 85 years of quarterbacking on that field, one of those guys can still throw it. One of those guys can still play. And that guy is Tom Brady, and that's why the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are in the NFC Championship next week.
For sure. And he deserves all the credit in the world, and we'll give it to him. But I can't believe I have to come to the quarterback, Dan Orlovsky, to talk about the defense, because at the end of the day, it was Tampa's defense that won them this game.
Absolutely, and it was Todd Bowles who was the difference maker. You know, this defense for Tampa Bay got up at the line of scrimmage and said, you know what, we're not going to allow you to dink and dunk this football down the field, and we're going to play physical at the line of scrimmage, not with just the offensive line, but with the receivers on the outside. And we're going to go, here you go, New Orleans, we'll dare you to throw the football down the field. We will dare you to put the ball over our heads for 60 minutes and win this football game doing it. And they were unable to do that. No one should be surprised by the way that Tampa Bay's defense played yesterday. Listen, over 2/3 of the snaps they played on defense yesterday, they played man coverage. I remember saying all week leading to this game, do not play zone against Drew because he'll pick you apart. And they didn't. So credit to Todd Bowles for going, we are going to play physical, challenging football and dare New Orleans to do something they haven't done all year, throw the ball downfield successfully. Credit that defense.
Right, so we'll have plenty of time the rest of today and, frankly, all week long to talk about the Buccaneers. They're still playing. Let's talk about the Saints, and let's talk about one of the greatest players in NFL history who may now have played his final game. Here was Drew Brees after the game yesterday.
I'm going to give myself an opportunity to think about the season, think about a lot of things, just like I did last year, and make a decision. No complaints, no regrets. There are obviously so many incredible memories, so many incredible relationships that have come as a result of playing this game.
So there's a lot to unpack here as we look at this. Ryan Clark, you are from New Orleans, so I know you have a sense of the magnitude of this in that city and really, frankly, I think across the NFL.
Well, listen, Tyrann Mathieu had an amazing tweet where he talked about Drew Brees and what he meant to the Saints organization, but not only the organization, but the city. What Drew Brees and the New Orleans Saints have brought from a sense of winning, from a sense of pride, from a sense of ownership of something good. Think about post-Katrina and what this team was, bringing the city its only world championship. That's because of Drew Brees, the consistent excellence that he continued to show, the way that he was off the field, the type of family man he was. He was really everything good that could be represented by an organization. And you hate to see it in this way. And the crazy thing about it is Drew Brees was plagued with bad defenses. He was plagued with bad calls. He was plagued with bad decisions or bad situations throughout his career because he should have more Super Bowls, but he doesn't. And so it's sad to see it in this way, but there is nothing for him to hang his head for. There is nothing for him to hang his head about. And when he thinks about or he talks about giving himself time to figure this out, we owe Drew Brees the opportunity to think about his career, to think about what he is, and to make his decision. And then we could speak about his legacy then.
That's fair, and that's the right thing to do. But, Dan, just watching it and taking emotion out of the equation, the difference yesterday as we watched those 2 quarterbacks at age 43 and 42 was one of them can still rip it, and, frankly, the other one it does not appear can anymore.
Yeah, that was the big difference. You know, was watching both Tom Brady and Drew Brees play and go, okay, Drew, it's time. You know, and I think that makes the decision easier, to be honest with you, Greeny. It makes the decision for Drew to be able to be honest with himself and go, I've earned the right to be at the table when the conversation of greatest ever. I've earned the right to be in that conversation. But now the reality is that I'm not good enough to lead this organization to the heights that it needs to or that it wants to become. And that's no knock on him. Tom Brady is. And that makes it even more remarkable to watch what Tom's able to accomplish. But Drew Brees is one of the greatest ever. And I think at the end of the day, he can hold his head high. The reality, too, this man came back from 11 broken ribs this year and a punctured lung to get back to being able to play. I mean, think about that. The commitment to the game and the commitment to his team, the toughness that he displayed in his final season, what we think is his final season.
Rex, a thought on Brees, again, as we have probably seen his final pass.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt. I mean, look, I coached against this guy for many, many years, and, you know, I'm honored to have coached against him. I mean, we talked about his competitiveness. Dan, you talked about coming back from 11 cracked ribs. How about all the shoulder injuries? How about all those type of things? Like, this guy is an – I mean, his career needs to be celebrated. That's why this is not the time for him to come out and say, I'm going to retire. No, let the sting of the loss get over with, and then we'll celebrate his great career and Hall of Fame career at the appropriate time.
Right, we will, indeed. And the Buccaneers go on. We'll have much more on that game as we continue. But let's get to the other of yesterday's games, and it was – I think we're describing it as the moment of the day. And let's pick it up with the Chiefs and the Browns, Dan. Yesterday, early second quarter, Chiefs are up 6-3, and Travis Kelce was a problem all day long.
Yeah, this is called wearing someone out. You know, Denzel Ward's a really good corner, but he pushes up, breaks out, snaps it off, return, touchdown, Kansas City.
The Chiefs have a 16-3 lead, and then here comes Mahomes again, scrambling, looking. The toe was clearly bothering him, but he's doing everything he can for his team, even though he was hobbling.
We've seen that from Patrick, though. When teams drop off in coverage, his ability to run, his willingness to run has been such a big part of their offense.
Now here's the huge play, right? And here's the huge play in the call. By now you know what. Rashard Higgins going towards the end zone. It's fumbled, it's out of bounds, and it is a touchback, Dan.
It's a great effort by Sorensen. Whether it should be a penalty or not, it's not called. And then that ball gets fumbled forward. A terrible rule for football. A huge swing in momentum in the game.
We're going to talk at length about the rule. So it's 19-3 in favor of Kansas City. But now here's the moment that changes everything. Dan, he goes down. You see the head go into the turf. And when he gets up, you just know his day is done.
Yeah, great job by his teammates being there. The weird thing was everyone was watching this going, where's the big hit? Like, where's the shot that you go, there it's happened, and we couldn't find it. But an awesome job by his teammates getting him off the field.
All right, we'll talk about the concussion in a moment. Meanwhile, let's talk about the rest of the game. This is in the fourth quarter. Baker Mayfield finding David Njoku on a big third down. Then moments later, how about this throw on a fourth and two?
Yeah, he had four throws this drive that were incredible. This one is the best. I mean, there's the only place. Look at where he has to throw that football. The only place he could throw it is fully outstretched. And then the ability to finish it off with Kareem Hunt being downhill in the run game. A remarkable drive by the whole Browns offense.
Hunt against his former team. And so now the Browns are within 22-17. And it's Chad Henne's chance to try and pick up the slack. And this is just a terrible pass.
Yeah, first and 25, so the coach calls a shot play, and sometimes you're like, I'm throwing it no matter what. A really poor decision by Chad Henne, and it felt like, uh-oh, that might be the big momentum swing that the Browns needed, but this is a great play by Chris Jones, getting pressure, forcing that ball out, and then rallying to make that tackle by the Chiefs' defense.
That came on a third and 11, so it's fourth and 9, and the Browns have to punt it back to Kansas City, but you understand the thinking, because Mahomes isn't there.
Right.
So then on third and 14, here come the two biggest plays of Chad Henne's life. Look at him finding space. Diving for the first down, he comes up just short. And so, Dan, that sets up a fourth and inches. What's Andy Reid going to do? What do you make of the play?
Go to one of the most uncoverable players in football, Tyreek Hill. They've done it before, and they'll do it again. And he just has that one stab to get inside. That defender falls off. It's an easy throw for the quarterback. Great guts by Andy Reid.
One thing to do it with Mahomes. It's another thing to do it with the backup. Andy Reid walks off the field a winner again after an absolute thriller that leaves as many questions as answers. And if you think Mahomes wasn't fired up, that tweet was everywhere yesterday. Hashtag anything is possible. A nod, obviously, to Kevin Garnett after the Celtics won the championship a generation ago. So, first and foremost, we need to go to Adam Schefter to get the very latest. Let us find out, what do we know about Patrick Mahomes, who is now 6 days away from his team playing in the AFC Championship game?
Greeny, he is in concussion protocol. He will have to pass out of protocol to be eligible to play in the AFC Championship game. And while the Chiefs are cautiously optimistic this morning that that will be the case, I will tell you that you don't know how these things go. They can be optimistic and they can feel good about him getting through concussion protocol. We all hope he does. But there have been plenty of instances in recent years where players felt good on a Monday. The team thought that they would have that player available only to see some sort of setback. They're difficult to predict these situations. They feel like he'll be able to get through it, but you can't say for sure when you're talking about concussions and the protocols that have to be followed to get Patrick Mahomes back onto the field for the AFC Championship game against the Buffalo Bills.
The protocols are a five-step process, and I'm not going to walk through every inch of it here. People can look that up quite easily. But, Shefty, at what point will they know for certain? Like, when will there be certainty as far as their knowledge of whether or not Mahomes will be able to play?
I would say, again, Wednesday, Thursday, you'll get a real good sense that he's in the clear at that point and that they can move ahead and begin plans and preparations as if he will be there. As you mentioned, it is a five-step process. He will need to be cleared by an independent neurologist. But assuming all that happens, I would think they'll have a pretty good idea of that Wednesday or Thursday, Greeny.
Okay, Shefty, so stay close. We'll need much more from you as we continue. And just how big a deal is that? Well, I mean, first of all, it goes without saying. It's Patrick Mahomes. He might be the best player in the league. Right now, according to Caesar Sportsbook at William Hill, the game is a pick'em. In the absence of knowledge of this, what we understand is that it would probably go to about Kansas City -2.5 with Mahomes. Buffalo maybe -4 if Mahomes cannot play. So let's go to this immediately. Where should we start? RC, let's start with you. As far as Patrick Mahomes is concerned and your sense of how this thing will play out.
Listen, my sense is that he'll play. I've been around football players. Look at Patrick Mahomes, the way he was dazed, and then watch him jog to the locker room. I've taken that jog to the locker room. You know what that jog says? You're running that fast so they think you can run, so you can now go into the locker room and convince them to let you back on the field. And so he's going to go through the protocols. A guy like me who on this set, we talk about our resident Steelers. I'm definitely our resident concussion protocol guy. So let me bring it to y'all. You're going to go through the protocol. You're going to take the impact test. You're going to go see the independent neurologist. You're going to go through all of these different steps. And at every step, you're going to do your best to concentrate and convince these doctors, convince your trainers that you can be on the field. This is just my opinion. I'm not Shefty. I don't have to talk to people. And y'all also can't hold me to this. Patrick Mahomes is going to be on the field this week. In the AFC Championship, it's going to be Josh Allen versus Patrick Mahomes. He's going to do everything and anything possible to get on the field, and I believe the Kansas City Chiefs will do the same. You can be worried, you can be scared, but we're going to see 15 on the field this weekend.
By the way, these games are both rematches of Week 6 games. Tampa and Green Bay played each other Week 6, and Buffalo and Kansas City played each other on a Monday Week 6. Let's then go to the decisions. Dan talked about it a bit during the highlight, Rex. When you're facing a fourth and less than a yard and your backup quarterback is on the field and you're Andy Reid and you have him throw a pass to win the game.
Yeah, that's what blows me away. I mean, we know if Patrick Mahomes is there, everybody in the stadium, including Tony Romo, knows that he's going to throw the ball, right?
Right.
But not here. Like, this is – and I could sit back and say, no, I knew he was going to throw it. I'll say this. The call on fourth and inches to throw the football is not as crazy as a lot of people think.
Mm-hmm.
All right? The crazy part is to do it with your backup quarterback.
Right.
Like, that is amazing to me. And so,
for sure.
Like, Andy Reid, though, believes in himself so much, and he believes that, hey, I got, you know, Chad Henne's in there. Doesn't matter who it is. He could have thrown it himself. Like, that's how much Andy believes in his call, and that just blows me away.
Take me through the thinking of it, Dan, again, with the backup quarterback on the field. If Mahomes is there, it's not even worth talking about, but how about Chad Henne in that moment?
Yeah, I think the reality is this, that I was not blown away by it. I knew Andy Reid was going to go to it. Yeah. Check the group text message. I knew it was going to be sprint out to Tyreek Hill. Like, it wasn't just a fact. Like, Andy Reid isn't thinking, can I do this with my backup quarterback? Andy Reid is thinking, is there anybody that can cover Tyreek Hill? Like, Like, is there anybody on the defense that when I put Tyreek Hill at number three, can someone stop him? The reality is no. And so Andy Reid was going to be aggressive because, like, I think there's this aspect of, like, I owe it to Patrick Mahomes. Like, I owe it to Patrick Mahomes to be aggressive in this situation so that we can give him the chance to come back and go win this AFC title game. And Andy Reid was always going to be aggressive because for a long time, Andy Reid was this coach that, like, everyone complained for not being aggressive enough. And he's really flipped over the past couple years of going, they are all gas, no brakes. Third and 14, everybody is going to go run that football and then force 40 seconds off the clock and make sure you're playing super conservative and then defense go win. Andy Reid's like, no, we have a really good football team. And I trust that Chad Henne, who's been in the NFL for 13 years, is 100% ready for this moment and will make the right decision. This was about Andy Reid's legacy growing yesterday.
All right, quick, RC.
Andy Reid made a Super Bowl call, right? When you got a Super Bowl in your back pocket, you make calls like that. Andy Reid wasn't tripping on the consequences. He wasn't tripping on the repercussions. He made the correct call because he believes in himself. In his offense, I think Rex said it this morning, more than he believes in anything else in the world. It was the right call to make. It didn't matter who was playing quarterback. It was going to work. And it did again, just like it did against Miami in week 14.
And so the Chiefs will host the championship game for the third consecutive year. Only one team has ever done that before. The Philadelphia Eagles, coached by Andy Reid. As we continue, the Browns, inches away from a potentially game-changing touchdown. Why the NFL needs to take a long, hard look at this rule. That conversation is on the way. And then Deshaun Watson clearly wants out of Houston. Question is, which team is best positioned to take advantage of the situation? Just getting started. Get up on ESPN.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use the code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only, not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use the code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Back on Get Up, and how about this moment? After it was over yesterday, Drew Brees and Tom Brady, the two legends out there on the field together with Brees' kids, you see a nice exchange there. Drew's wife, Brittany, would come over and give Brady a hug, and then Brady tossing the football around with Brees' kids. Just nice to see those two out there, those two legends after what may well have been Drew Brees' final game. Coming up, a game-changing play nullified by a rule that we have a major issue with. Can we change it? We'll talk about that, and we'll see how Rex does with this. From Sneaky Hembo, Tom Brady becomes the second quarterback to start a conference championship game in three different decades. Who was the first? That's the question. The answer's next on ESPN. I just want to be a legend.
People know. NBA fans, listen up. You've got to try Pick 6, the newest fantasy app from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Getting started is simple. Select if a player will have more or less of a stat. For example, will a player have more than one rebound, or will a player have less than 3.5 assists? Pick your favorite players and compete for huge cash prizes. Download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app now using code PARLAY and take on the competition with your best NBA player picks. Only on DraftKings Pick 6 with code PARLAY. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date lists of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
Back on Get Up, and boy, has Rex been agonizing over this through the break. I told him I think he's going to get it. Tom Brady next week will become the second quarterback to start a conference championship game in three different decades. Who's the only player to do it before?
Oh, see, gosh.
Don't overthink it.
Well, if I'm thinking Fran Tarkin, I'm thinking Johnny Knight, I'm thinking all these guys. Aaron Rodgers.
The very first name you said to me.
No, don't say that.
The first thing you said to me over there was Johnny Unitas. He turns to me at the desk and he says, Johnny Unitas. And then he talked himself out of the 70s. Unitas kept playing into the 70s. Rex Ryan, the answer is Johnny Unitas. It was the first words out of his mouth, and you talked yourself out of it.
I'm devastated. Yes. I don't know what to tell you.
We're all disappointed. All right, coming up next, speaking of disappointed, everyone talking about this play. By now you know it. Rashard Higgins diving to the pylon. Daniel Sorensen launching himself like a missile. The ball goes out of bounds through the end zone. It's a touchback. Chiefs get the football, a potential lost touchdown, an enormous moment. Here's Higgins' coach, Kevin Stefanski.
I will never, ever doubt Rashard Higgins' effort or our guys' effort. Our rule there is not to reach the ball out. It's first and goal, and he knows that. So, again, appreciate his effort. He battled like he always does, but we got to fight that urge because it's such a big loss if it does end up being a touchback.
It is a touchback, and the entire world goes crazy. Every time one of those plays happens, a lot of people on social media react as though they didn't even know it was the rule. But the reality of it is a rule many of us have been complaining about for a very long time. Orlovsky, your reaction.
It's a stupid rule, and the NFL needs to change it. I get it. Like, everyone goes, well, give me an alternative. Well, here you go. Listen, in the NFL, when you fumble the football, to recover it, there needs to be a clear and obvious recovery. Well, when it goes out of bounds, there is no clear and obvious recovery, number one. So the ball would naturally go back to the offense if that was in the middle of the field. Number two, when you fumble the football forward and it goes out of bounds without a clear and obvious recovery, it goes back to the spot of the fumble. Now, if we want to penalize 10 yards when that situation happens and it's got to go back to 11-yard line, that's fine. But to sit here and constantly penalize a team for fumbling at the 1-yard line and stop everybody telling me that, like, Bill Belichick made up this rule where you can only do it on four. Like, every coach says that, guys. Every coach in the NFL and college football teaches their players not to do it. I've seen Patriots do it. I've seen a ton of guys do it. So the fact that we have to constantly penalize offenses for being aggressive or playing with effort in that situation is stupid, and the NFL needs to rectify this rule to stop rewarding the defense and not and constantly penalizing the offense. Go ahead, RC.
I mean, can we get rewarded for something at some point by some rule? First off, and Dan, of all people in America, I thought you would know end zone is sacred.
Don't say it.
You know the end zone is sacred, Dan. You know we treat the end zone differently. It's the one place in the world where if you hold, it's a safety. It's the one place in the world where if it's intentional grounding, it's a safety. Everything is different where it's painted. That's where it's painted. It's a special, it's a sacred place. And it's either we make a decision to keep the rules to where fumbles are ruled a certain way, or to where fumbles are treated a certain way, or we continue the tradition of the end zone being sacred. And I get it. It's terrible. If you play offense, you drove 90 yards, you tried to show a lot of effort, and the ball went through the end zone. So hold on to it. So I'm not going to sit here and whine. I'm not going to say, oh, we should change the rule. Because like I said, Dan, if anybody knows in the world, the end zone is sacred.
Well, first of all,
I have to let Orlovsky have a rebuttal to that. Go ahead,
yeah,
Dan.
First of all, you know what used to be special and sacred? Our friendship. You know what is no longer? Our friendship. After that 60 seconds, we are done.
Okay. All right, Rex, let me come to you on the rule because I have a whole other thought. Go ahead. The rule.
Well, I think when you look at it, obviously this rule should be changed. I mean, we look at this thing four or five times a year. I'm saying, look, I mean, I'm just telling you.
Cowher said at halftime, if you want to put the ball out to the 20,
that's fine, but
give it to
the offense. And I could see something like that. I believe this rule will change, all right? I've never had a problem. And Dan's right when he talks about every single team in the league. You show videos of it. You don't do this type of stuff. Because of the stupid rule, all right? And so, you know, it's not just a Bill Belichick thing, but I can't, you know, as a defensive coach, yeah, you absolutely love it, but it makes no sense.
Okay, I want to talk about the Browns season in a moment, but I would also ask the question here very quickly, because there were two pieces of that play that were controversial yesterday. There's the rule, which was correctly, no one is arguing that it wasn't correctly interpreted. But clearly the defender launches with his helmet on that play, which is against the rules, and the first words out of your mouth are, well, that's not reviewable. And the question I continue to ask on this show, on the radio, and I will never stop asking is, why is anything not reviewable? Anything that is that clear and obvious can be reviewable. Coaches have a limited number of plays they can challenge. So if you want to allow them to challenge something that was clearly, if they could have challenged that play, that clearly would have been overturned.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right?
But here's the thing. If you're an official, the number one job you have is not to officiate the game. It's to protect the players.
Right.
So what the hell are you looking at? Don't tell me, oh, he's got this to look at, whatever.
Meaning, yeah, why wasn't it called?
Yeah, I don't understand it. Your number one job is protect our players. All right, and that's what it should be. And why the hell you missed this, I don't know. It's beyond me.
So clearly he did dive in. RC, again, I feel like I have to ask the safety in this conversation. Is there any question but that the way the rules are currently officiated in the NFL, that should have been a penalty?
Yeah, with the way the rules are, it's a penalty. I mean, I think the intention of Dan Sorensen there is to make contact with the shoulder. Obviously, the anatomy and the physiology of the body make that impossible in that moment. But with the way the rules are written, if we're going to go by the letter of the rule, if we're going to try to protect the players, no matter the situation, no matter the game, no matter what it means, that call has to be made. And so that's one that they missed. I agree with you, Greeny. That's something that they should be able to review there, because that's truly a game-changing play. But for the matters of player health and safety, that's something they're trying to take out of the football game.
Yep. 100%. Okay, I'm going to leave this here for the moment, because I want to have a full conversation about Baker Mayfield and Kevin Stefanski, the season the Browns just had. We will do that a little later. But let us get to what will be the biggest story of the NFL offseason and could potentially lead to one of the biggest trades in the history of the sport. Many people around the Texans organization believe that Deshaun Watson has played his last snap with the team. That is according to our Adam Schefter. And the good news is we have our Adam Schefter sitting here right now. So we can bring Adam Schefter, I'm coming to you immediately. What is the very latest on the situation with Deshaun Watson and his future in Houston?
Well, Greeny, there's a lot to this, and there's going to be a lot more to this. And it's a little early in the process, considering that the Texans just hired their new general manager, Nick Caserio, and they don't even have a head coach yet. But you can begin to see this particular situation unfold as the offseason goes on. What we know now is this, that basically, according to Sarah Barshop, who covers the Texans for ESPN.com, Deshaun Watson has not returned calls from the organization. What we also know is that he's very unhappy with the way the organization has proceeded this offseason and has looked back at some of the organization's prior actions. What we can see here is that not only can Deshaun Watson request a trade, but he also could decide to withhold his services. And because of the no trade clause in his contract, the Texans have very little control here. Essentially, this is like an NBA situation. This is Deshaun Watson getting to pick where he wants to go. This is an NBA style trade if and when the Texans get to the point that they are ready to make it, which they're not right now. But I believe, and other people around the league believe, they're going to be forced to get to eventually. And because that no trade clause exists, if they said, hey, we want to trade Deshaun Watson to, hypothetically, Chicago, and he said, I don't want to go to Chicago. I want to go to Miami. I'm not going to report to Chicago. Or I want to be traded to the Jets. I'm not going to report to Chicago. You can begin to go through any of the variables and any of the hypotheticals in your mind. This is in a bad place right now. It looks like it's going to continue to go down a bad place. But let's see who the Texans hire as their general manager. Let's see if they're able to repair any of the damage that's been done. And let's see how this situation unfolds. But we've talked about this before. This, Greeny, this is going to be the story of the offseason.
Oh, no question about it. And Shefty, don't play with my emotions. Again, let's put Adam Schefter's tweet from yesterday back up there again about the Jets. Because it just, for those of you who didn't see it, and it had thousands and trillions of likes and favorites and everything else, but Schefter tweeted, there's no team out there better positioned than the New York Jets to put together a compelling trade package for Deshaun Watson. So obviously, like my resting heart rate like raised like 40 beats as we had that conversation. Yeah, go ahead, Shefty.
Well, let me just say this. Again, because Deshaun Watson gets to pick, again, the Texans can solicit whatever offers they want. But ultimately, it's going to come to what Deshaun Watson wants. Have you noticed? He spent a lot of time in New York recently. He's there right now, New York, New Jersey. Maybe that appeals to him, Greeny. We know that Miami might appeal to him. So there are two teams, by the way, with the second and third picks in the draft. So it's not difficult to come up with a scenario under which the Jets or the Dolphins could satisfy the Houston Texans. Now, the question is, where does Deshaun Watson want to go? Because again, I believe he influences and dictates it once the Texans get to a point that they fully recognize the trouble that they're in with their quarterback.
All right, let me go around the horn really quickly with reaction. Orlovsky, you were sending some notes yesterday. What is your sense of how this thing goes?
Oh, Deshaun Watson will never play for the Houston Texans again. I've felt that way for weeks. This will be one of the biggest organizational mistakes in the history of the NFL. It's the biggest one that I've ever seen. This organization has chosen a guy, Jack Easterby, over Deshaun Watson. Huh. I mean, think about that. And listen, there should be six teams who don't call the Houston Texans. 25 others should. 25 should be calling the Houston Texans right now. Kansas City, Seattle, Tampa Bay, Green Bay, the Chargers, and Buffalo, they don't need to call. And I know Cincy, because the knee injury to Joe Burrow scares me a little bit. But at the end of the day, everyone should be calling Houston. This is a horrible mistake by this organization. And the last thing I'll say is this, Greeny. I don't want the narrative out there that this is an ego thing by Deshaun Watson, like he's forcing his way out. This is a terrible display of organizational leadership and disrespect to their best player, and this is the necessary thing for Deshaun Watson.
RC?
This is about history. This is about the history of the Houston Texans, the way that they've treated players, the way that they've treated African-American players, and this is about lying. When you come to your best player and you tell him you're going to be involved in the situation and then you lie to him, now things start to feel familiar. You feel like you're going down the same road that you have already been before, that things are not changing. And I think Deshaun Watson not only did a deep dive into the history of his organization, but he did a deep dive into history as a whole. And he knows that this will not be fixed. And you said it last week, Greeny. I never knew Andre Johnson had a voice and I played against him. So for him to tell Deshaun Watson, you know what? Stand your ground, be strong. Mm-hmm. This organization will waste great players. That spoke volumes to me. He will never play another down there. Greeny, Shefty mentioned NBA. Well, Deshaun Watson has the Rich Paul or the Clutch Sports of agents and David Mulligetta. He'll get it done. That's a wrap.
Rex, give me a quick thought. We'll come back to this in the next hour. Give me a very quick thought, Rex. I haven't heard from
you. I think this is absolutely crazy. I mean, but I get it. If there's that, I mean, that big a divide, they're going to trade him. It sounds crazy. You go your whole career trying to find a franchise quarterback. I never had one, okay? So I would do everything in my power to keep this guy, but you've already done everything in your power to let him go, and it drives me crazy. Yep. You know where he should end up, Greeny.
Yes.
Come to the Big Apple right here and be the man. We still celebrate Joe Namath for all those type of years, and being a Jet fan, come to the Big Apple.
All right, 52 years later. I got to leave it there for the moment. I'm coming back, I promise, to this. We'll get more from Shefty as we go, but I got to take a break. As we continue, another season ended in playoff disappointment for Lamar Jackson and the Ravens. RC will explain exactly what Baltimore has to do next. That's on the way. This is Get Up on ESPN.
Delicious, meat nutritious, and the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
We're not trying to let the outside noise distract us from what we're trying to be.
Playoff football. It's win or go home.
It is caught by Diggs, gets a few blocks, touchdown Buffalo. Intercepted. Taron Johnson goes 102 yards.
The play of the season.
Jackson is still down in the end zone. Jackson has been taken to the locker room. Bad has gotten worse.
And the Buffalo Bills advance to the AFC Championship game next Sunday.
The sights and sounds of a Saturday night in Orchard Park. The Baltimore Ravens had, by all accounts, a great season, especially when you consider having to deal with the COVID outbreak. The offense, again, rush heavy, first in the league in rushes and rushing yards per game. This, of course, made them last in a bunch of passing categories, something their receiver, Hollywood Brown, thinks needs to change.
Whenever you, like, the number one rushing and the 30-something passing, is like, that's not right. That's not balanced. So we got to find a way to, you know, balance our game. You know, even with our great rushing attack, we got to be able to throw the ball. We got to be able to, you know, move the ball through the air.
All right, and so here we are. It feels like a pretty similar conversation to one that we were having a year ago at this time, despite the fact that they got their first playoff win. Ryan Clark, you were making an interesting point today about the way the Ravens need to approach this situation.
Listen, this is an organizational priority, and I'm not excluding Lamar Jackson from any blame, from any fault, from any responsibility in the past game. And it's kind of hard to be upset with the Baltimore Ravens because of the way that they've embraced Lamar Jackson as a player and the things that he brings. But they have to fix this problem. I don't care if you go find the next new, young, hottest college guy. He needs to be a pass game coordinator. There is someone that needs to spend time on getting Lamar Jackson in the best places to complete passes and be efficient in the pass game. It's not about the number of attempts. It's about the efficiency and their effect on the game. Also, get him a number one wide receiver. When Antonio Brown said he wanted to go there, during that break, during that suspension, they should have been working on that deal. And Hollywood Brown is talking about those things, but right now he's not a number one. And so they need to figure out ways this offseason to say, okay, here is where Lamar Jackson is great. No, you know what they should do? They should go chill in Buffalo. They should send the whole offensive staff up to go see Brian Daboll, up to go see McDermott, and say, what did you do with Josh Allen? You understood you had a quarterback with specific traits and specific deficiencies. Mm-hmm. How did you fix him? How did you help him? What did you get him? And how is he now a top three MVP candidate? Go figure that out. That's what Baltimore needs to do.
Dan?
Two names. Allen Robinson, Kenny Golladay. That's exactly who Baltimore needs to go chase this offseason. Okay, they need to go get a number one receiver that's proven, that's big, that's physical, that's got that wide catch radius, that guys can go make plays for Lamar Jackson in the pass game. Because RC's right, like, Hollywood Brown has got traits and he's got skills, but he hasn't proven he's a one. They need a true one that can develop this pass game that he wants the coaching staff to go out and get. And the last thing I'd say is this, Green. Listen, all offseason people are going to say Lamar Jackson needs to become a better thrower, needs to become better in the pass game. Lamar Jackson, please, if you're listening, do not listen to them. Okay? Everyone's going to tell you to try to become something that you're not. Everyone's going to try and talk to you all offseason to try to ask you to be a quarterback that you're not. Okay? You are a great player. No one is going to question your work ethic that you'll fractionally get better as a thrower. It is upon your organization to take your talent and make it flourish in the pass game. You're good enough. Don't try to change who you are just because people who don't know what they're talking about are going to be really loud. Have your organization go get you a number one receiver and your passing game will be just fine.
What do you think, Rex?
Well, something about, you know, if it's up to the organization, it will be done. Okay? They're going to understand he needs a number one receiver. Hollywood Brown, I love that little tweet you make in there. But you failed, my friend. You were brought in to be a number one receiver. You ain't.
Right.
Number one, you're way too dang small. And if you're going to go, look, Lamar's not the most accurate guy of all time. Okay, right. We get it. Let's get him some big targets, guys that can catch them, you know, have a wide catch radius.
Yeah.
That's what you do. And to me, this, by the way, you know, Josh Allen was probably third in league MVP voting.
Yeah.
This man won the MVP.
Yeah.
So it's not all broke right there. I don't disagree that they need to get a little more creative in their passing game, for God's sakes. But get a guy. I think Dan's right. Why not get both of them? By the way, the first shot we showed was Keenan Allen. You ain't getting him right. from the Chargers, I can assure you. But go get the other two.
Allen Robinson, Kenny Galladay, yep.
Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen were in the same draft class, and there are a lot of similarities between them. When they came in, the way they were viewed, outstanding athletes, questions in the development of their passing game, maybe the biggest difference between the two of them is Stephon Diggs. I mean, it may not be any more complicated necessarily than that. That was one of the things that happened this weekend. Let's run you through the rest of the weekend's wrap-up here because it was an extraordinary weekend. And by the way, on that game, thousands of Bills fans, hashtag Bills Mafia, they showed their support for the injured Lamar Jackson. They donated tens of thousands of dollars to his charity, Blessings in a Backpack. That's a charity the Ravens quarterback supported during his college career. So an extraordinary story that came out of that game. Elsewhere, some surprising news from the Rams. After their divisional loss to the Packers this weekend, their coach Sean McVay said, quote, everything is being evaluated, including the quarterback position. Jared Goff, of course, is their quarterback. He was in a Super Bowl a couple of years ago, and he gets paid a whole lot of money. Speaking of which, to the NBA, Saturday night, James Harden became the first player in NBA history to record a 30-point triple-double in his debut with the team. First game as a Net, he had 32 points, 14 assists, 11 boards. Brooklyn beat the Magic 122-115. Back to the NFL as we continue. The third time was the charm for Brady and the Bucks. Rex will explain how Tampa turned the tables. That's next. It's Get Up on ESPN.